Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Universe Within podcast. On this episode, I decided to take an interview that I did with my friend Sebastian. I think we did this interview a number of months ago now, and he released it, I believe it was probably a few weeks ago now. I've actually been traveling with my friend and colleague Marav Artsy. We just finished a dieta, a plant medicine workshop in Ireland, and it was really an amazing time. But because of that, I've been very busy. After this, I'm headed to Israel and then New York to continue running dietas. So I shot a number of these episodes in advance, but I decided to release this one as well with Sebastian. Sometimes people are asking me for more interviews where I'm being interviewed or I answer questions. So I think and hope you'll really enjoy this interview. Sebastian's a really great guy. We worked together at the Temple of the Way of Light. He came down for an ayahuasca workshop. And then recently he started his own podcast, which is really good. And he has some amazing guests. The podcast is called Leadership Adelic. He interviewed me for that podcast. And we got in some really beautiful topics. So I think we touched on a lot of really interesting subjects around this work of plant medicine. His kind of specialty or the idea behind the podcast is really focusing on kind of this marriage between psychedelics and leadership. He used to work for Microsoft. I believe he was an engineer there. So he's a really fascinating guy. And I think the show went about an hour and a half, and we went into some really deep topics. He did an amazing job leading it. So I think and hope you'll enjoy this conversation. After this episode, I'm trying to remember the order, but I believe after this is an interview that I did with a new friend of mine. Her name is Alejandra. She does a lot of work with The Voice, a really fascinating lady. We met up in the Sacred Valley before I left, the Sacred Valley of Peru. So that was a really good conversation. I'm going to try and do an interview with a friend of mine named Kathy Coyle. She was actually working with us in the dieta in Ireland. We tried to do it in person, but we were both super busy, so we weren't able to. But I'm going to try and do a live version, or internet version over the computer with her. So hopefully that will be the following one. And then I did an interview with a really fascinating lady who is a friend of mine, or a friend of mine, Kalia Taylor, who I interviewed in one of the previous episodes. She's a friend of hers. She's done a lot of work with plant medicines, a lot of different traditions, and that was a really great conversation too. So those should be the next episodes coming out. I'm actually coming to you from the beautiful island of Islay in Scotland. It's always been a bit of a dream of mine to come out to this island. If I'm not looking in the camera, it's because it's the window is opening to such a beautiful view. I keep getting caught by the beauty, but they make all of my favorite whiskies. They all come from this particular island. They have this very peaty quality to them. They use peat to smoke the barley, which is what they use to make the whiskey, and they have this very distinctive flavor. So it was really an amazing time for me to be able to come here. It was relatively close to Ireland. I had a few days off before going to Israel, where we're running our next workshop. So it's been an amazing opportunity. The dieta was also really amazing. Maybe for some of you who are more regular listeners, I've talked about this prophecy a lot by my friend Amika, who comes from the Colombian Amazon, a group of people called the Tubu. They have this prophecy of the Dirdo Amasa, the children of the new dawn, the people who are bridging the medicine of the four directions. And being in Ireland was very inspiring for me, because very much beginning to mix and bridge these especially Amazonian ways of working with plants in this very experiential way, based in a lot of tradition, and bridging that with some of these European and North American traditions. And it was very inspiring. People went really deep into the work, so I was really, really happy, really honored just with the magic of this work and what's possible. So that was a really amazing opportunity for me. Now we're going to Israel, and I imagine it'll be a similar experience beginning to work with some of the plants there. If you're interested in that, I believe we had a last-minute cancellation for Israel, so I think we still have a spot left. Although probably when this is coming out, that will be over. But the following diet in New York, I believe we also have one spot open for the first week, and I believe maybe two or three still open for the second week. So if you're interested, I'll put a link to that on the show notes. Also, Sebastian, who did this interview, he's running a workshop in the Sacred Valley of Peru with a mutual friend of ours, Kunti, who I interviewed actually in two episodes of this show. It was one long interview that was broken into two parts. So they're amazing people. Also put a link to the retreat they're running in the show notes. And I think that's it. I've been talking for a while. So without further ado, here is my conversation. Oh, I know what I forgot to mention. If you're able to support this podcast, that's always a really big help. If you're able to sign up for Patreon, that's a really big help to me. It's a subscription service. There's different tiers you can sign up for. You can sign up for as little as a dollar a month. With those different tiers, it gives you some really interesting things back, things like early access to shows, bonus material, Q&As. So that's a really big help to me to continue to make and produce and edit and do all the things that it takes to bring these shows out. To all the people who have done that, as always, thank you very much. I deeply appreciate all your support. And if you are able to do that, thank you in advance. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. If you're not able to do that, as always, the really small things, if you're listening to this on YouTube or watching this on YouTube, hitting the subscribe button, turning on the notification bell, liking the video, that's a really big help to get this out to a bigger audience. It really helps with the algorithms. And then if you're listening to this, whether that's on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, subscribing to the show, leaving a starred rating, a short review, that's also a really big help. So I think that is it. And so without further ado, here is the conversation where I was interviewed on my friend Sebastian's podcast, Leadership Adelics. Running out from the maze, running out from the maze, running out of the maze today. Running out from the maze, running out from the maze, running out from the maze today. I'm running out from the maze. Running up from the maze, run out of the maze today.
Welcome to Leadership Adelics Season 2. My name is Sebastian. Join me every week to explore the intersection between leadership, psychedelics, and deep spiritual experiences. We'll learn from people's journeys, from the hardships they've had, and from the insights they've gained, and how they use those insights to manifest a better future for their community, for themselves, and for the world around them. If you like the show, subscribe to it. And if you know anyone who would be a great guest for the show, send them my way and I'll take it from there. Hi everyone, I've got a special announcement. I'm working on a retreat in Peru in the Sacred Valley in the fall of this year. This retreat will be led by some amazing healers, two people I've worked with in the past, and will be focused around creativity, reconnecting with it, and manifesting a better future. It will be a plant medicine retreat in a beautiful location. More details to come, but if you're interested, reach out to me and I'll give you more information. This week, we meet with Jason Grechnik. I met Jason 7 years ago when he was a facilitator for ayahuasca ceremonies at the Temple of the Way of Light in the Amazon jungle. I was super impressed then, and I'm even more impressed now after our conversation. Jason has such a depth of knowledge. He shares the wisdom he's gained from his fascination with ancient cultures and what he's learned from his lifelong journey working with plants as food, nutrition, and medicine. We also talk a little bit about martial arts, where he got his discipline from, and the importance of principles in today's challenging times. Jason currently runs plant medicine retreats in Peru and travels abroad running dietas. He continues to work at the Temple of the Way of Light and also created a podcast called The Universe Within. Check it out. I love this conversation, so I hope you enjoy it as much as I did, and I'll see you on the other side. Well, welcome, Jason, to Leadershipadelics. It's so good to have you here today. We haven't seen each other for 7 years, and we got to spend the last 30 minutes working together to try to get the podcast going. So, and I'm at the same time, I'm enjoying the sunset behind you. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, it's funny, a former Microsoft engineer and a guy who has a podcast, and it took us a half an hour to get started.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, I think the technology still has a long way to go. But, you know, I'm not there anymore, just like you said, former. Last time I saw you was at the Temple of the Way of Light 7 years ago. And you were, I think, the lead facilitator. I don't know if they have titles or anything, but you came across as the lead facilitator. And I really appreciated your presence there. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's amazing. We were just chatting before the podcast started. It's hard to imagine 7 years ago, but I guess so. But I was saying you look great, and I'm really happy that you started this podcast, and thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks. So, you know, since the last time I saw you, what happened? How's your life been?
Well, I'm trying to think. 7 years ago, that would have been maybe 2015. At that time, I was facilitating at the Temple of the Way of Light, which is a big ayahuasca healing center in the Peruvian Amazon, working with a group of people called the Shipibo people, who have a really long lineage of working with ayahuasca and just the plant pharmacopoeia of the jungle in general. I just finished a pretty long process of dieting, doing a lot of work with tobacco and trees and probably since that time, not a lot has changed. For really up until the pandemic, I was doing a lot of facilitating, running some diets myself. And then with the pandemic, a lot of this work shut down because I'm here in Peru, and that's where a lot of this work is. And Peru went into a really strict lockdown. So that kind of shook things up. But I was in the jungle for that period of lockdown. And then when things finally began to open up a little bit, I came up here to where I am in the Sacred Valley right now of Peru, near the Cusco area. And I've been doing a lot of work running dietas, working with this tobacco lineage I've been trained in. Wow. I was back at the temple at the end of last year, November and December. So I was back in the Moloko where we met each other. And that's kind of been my life for the last 7 years, is just pretty much working nonstop. I really felt a call that was my path at that point, was really just to work and learn through working. And then also during the pandemic, I started a podcast of my own, really to give voice to people who I respect who are doing this work, the curanderos, the healers, the guides, the facilitators, the wisdom keepers. So between that and running diets and facilitating, it's a pretty full-time job.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how busy you get when you're doing something you enjoy. That's kind of been my learning for the last few months, was like, oh wow, it was a lot easier to set boundaries when I was at Microsoft than now, when I'm actually really enjoying what I'm doing. I'm assuming you know, it's the same. You're really busy and enjoying what you're doing, and just the time flies. You know, the other thing that's really funny is like how we reconnected, because somehow you ended up moving next to my dear friend Kunti, who I've known for the last 4 or 5 years. We've done retreats together. I'm looking forward to having her on the podcast as well. And so I don't know how that happened, but that was kind of magical when she told me, it's like, yeah, I'm on the podcast for that guy named Jason. And he used to work at the Temple of the Way of Light. And I was like, yeah, I think I know that Jason. There's, you know, and it's like, does he have like beautiful piercing eyes and yeah. I was, oh yeah, that's him. So no, it was wonderful to reconnect, and I love the you talk about Dayeras and the work you're doing with the sacred tobacco. And you know, when I looked at your background before the podcast, like your work with plant medicine goes way back, and it's not just like sacred medicine, it's a broad range of plants. And I'm curious, like when did that journey start, and what kind of like got you into that in the first place?
Yeah. Well, first, Kunti's great. I met her working at I came to a temazcal that she was running. And I just really, I respected her. I respected the space that she held, and it was great. And I've been to a number of them since. That's one of the medicines that I really love. It works in similar and different ways from a lot of plant medicine, but I find it super, super healing. And Kunti, yeah, she's amazing. And yeah, she was on the podcast. She has the record of the longest podcast. I think we went over 5 hours.
I can't believe that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I always have wonderful.
It was so long. I split it into 2 parts. I've been interested in plants for a long time, and I think a lot was my own interest in spirituality. Since a young age, I was really interested in martial arts and shamanism, although I wouldn't even call it shamanism, because at that time, kind of in the culture I grew up in, that was a very foreign word.
Yeah. Where did you grow up in?
But I grew up in the U.S., in Virginia, actually, okay. Which is interesting because that's also tobacco country. But I traveled a lot with my father when I was young, so I think I was exposed to a lot of indigenous cultures and different places in the world. So something in me saw that wherever I went, I saw the commonality of people. And that, I think, was a really fundamental part of my journey. And then also seeing that different people had very different worldviews and cosmovisions and different ways of interacting with the world. I think I've been very fortunate to grow up in the United States. There's a lot of blessings there, a lot of beauty, a lot of opportunity. And at the same time, I think there was something that I felt was missing in that culture, this deeper reverence or connection to nature. I found a lot of solace. I was a Boy Scout and Eagle Scout, and I think part of that was just there was something very, very therapeutic, or I felt very connected being out in nature and camping and hiking and building fires and shooting guns and bows and arrows and, you know, learning about plants. Even, yeah. I mean, I remember one time I crawled through a poison ivy patch, and it was a summer night, and I was sweating, and then I went, you know, back to my sleeping bag, and I didn't shower that night, and the next day or 2 days later, I mean, I was covered head to toe with these rashes, and it was one of the most painful things I've ever experienced. Yeah. But it was also something that was quite curious, also learning like, well, at that time I didn't learn, but more recently, like what's the cure for that? How does one work with that? And so eventually I think that led me to just become really interested in religion and spirituality. I ended up moving to New York, which to some people that may sound like counterintuitive, but it was actually amazing because it's just filled with people. It's filled with any and every school you can imagine. And so I kind of felt like I had the world at my fingertips there and really studying whatever I could. Yeah. And then I became really interested in food as medicine and in plants and herbalism, becoming interested in things like traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurveda. And eventually I found a teacher who worked with plants, predominantly through food, through fasting. He was very much a shaman in his own right. His name was Dr. David Jubbs. And that really opened me to the world, I think, of really investigating what plants were and how they could work. And not just on a more of like an allopathic level, like if there was a symptom, this plant cures that, although I was very fascinated by that. But this sense that plants could also open us to another reality. And that was something I had never really experienced. I had taken mushrooms one time as a kid and actually had a super profound experience. Mm. But I still didn't really, I don't know, somehow connect the dots. And eventually at some point, a particular plant, ayahuasca, started coming to me very strongly. And I think I resisted it for a long time. I didn't feel like I needed it. But at a certain point, it was just... And some people who've worked with some of these plants may understand it, but there was just a deep calling, and it was something I couldn't avoid any longer. And so I found myself in the Peruvian Amazon, actually at the Temple of the Way of Light. And that really opened me up to kind of this idea in more Western culture, like this Greek word of gnosis. It was a different knowing. It wasn't something of the mind, or it was pointing towards things that I had read in books or learned about, but it was actually experiencing that for the first time in a different way. And I just knew that I wanted to go deeper into that process to better understand it. And that was 10 years ago. And I ended up just kind of immersing myself in this world, working with Shipibo people, working with other indigenous people, and just really learning deeper about these plants, about these traditions, about different worldviews. And then I think really finding myself in a position now, I like this word a lot, of bridge keeper. It's there's a guy who I've worked with, his name is Amika, he comes from a group of people in the Colombian Amazon called the Tubu, and they speak about this prophecy of, they call them the Diro Amasa, the children of the new dawn, the people who can take the medicines of the four directions and help to create a new Maloka, a new world. And I kind of find myself in that position. I'm certainly not an expert in any of these things. as a guy who I just interviewed, Alonso del Rio, says that the more I do this work, the less I know.
Yes.
And yes. But I find myself working with these plants and working with people and sharing to the best of my ability and trying to always discover more myself, and that's kind of where I'm at now.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing all that. I'm probably going to want to dig in and some of those past experiences. Like you mentioned, your first experience with magic mushrooms when at a young age, you said it was really profound. Can you share a little bit more of that and how that happened, and like what you got out of it, what insights you get out at an early age?
It was an interesting process because it was when I was living in Europe, and I went to Amsterdam and like probably all the 20-year-olds who do that, the point was to just consume these things that I never had access to, mushrooms, marijuana, edibles. As a young person, I never felt called to what I considered drugs. I think I was very much raised in that generation in the 80s and 90s of seeing these commercials on TV of Nancy Reagan saying, this is your brain on drugs, and, you know, popping an egg into the frying pan. And also part was I just never felt I needed. I was pretty good in school. I was pretty good at sports, being a Boy Scout. Like I had a lot to occupy my time. So I think my energy was just focused in other things. But for whatever reason, when I was 20 and I was in Amsterdam, I went with some friends and they really wanted to try these things. And I was like, okay. And I had smoked some marijuana before, but it actually never had any impact on me. And I think a lot of that was, you know, part of this work is I think there has to be a desire, there has to be a belief in a way, a willingness, and also an aspect of letting go. And also there we have a control mechanism, we have a certain fortitude that may kind of override some of these things as well, up until a certain point, obviously.
And I think also part of it was maybe a disbelief, a thinking that these things didn't really have power over me, maybe kind of an egoic thing. And then it could have been some protective mechanism too. Yeah. But I remember I went with some friends and they were all partaking in mushrooms and edibles and they were having these experiences and I had nothing. I mean, I was like pounded. I was eating all of this stuff and smoking and taking mushrooms and nothing happened. And it was finally at the end of the night, it was probably like midnight. I was like, well, I guess nothing's going to happen. And I started to walk home and all of a sudden the world just shifted. Everything, the colors slowed down, everything went into kind of a slow motion. And it was just, it was an experience that I had never felt before. It was not the best set and setting because I was in the middle of the road and by this time everyone I was with was through their process and they didn't know what to do with me. That's when also some fear started coming and because also they, you know, I could hear them being like, well, is he okay? Like, what do we do with him? And then I'm like, well, am I okay? Or, but then eventually I remember just sitting and staring at a wall for it seemed like hours and just being in awe. And but then interestingly for many years, I mean really for I guess over a decade after that, I had no desire to ever do it again. It was kind of a fleeting experience. And it wasn't until many years later that calling came. And I think part of that was because I think that initial experience, at least for me, it didn't come from a genuine desire. Yeah. It was something I was doing more for other people to kind of fit in or, I don't know, just because I was there to do something. But when ayahuasca came to me, it came from... I think you can describe it in different ways, but a sense of a higher calling, like it was something I really needed to do. And it was also a point in my life. I'd been living in New York and I wasn't well in a way. I mean, physically I was fine. Emotionally, I was more or less fine, but there was just kind of a deep dissatisfaction. And I knew I needed to get out. I knew that if I didn't get out, I was going to die. And that could be metaphorical. It very well could have been literal also, but I just knew that path was no longer serving me. And also I didn't really know how to get out. I didn't know what to do or where to go. And then at that point, serendipitously, ayahuasca began calling me and eventually I heeded that call.
How did you prepare for that call? I mean, like, given you were doing lots of work with plant medicine already and you had experience with like Chinese medicine and Ayurveda medicine, and like how did you prepare for that? Like, how did you see it coming to you? And
Well, I was doing actually a lot of yoga at the time and still really immersed in different practices, studying breath work. I had a friend who was part of the Santo Daime Church, and that's a big Brazilian church. So I had known about ayahuasca, but somehow that didn't really call me working in that kind of church setting. So I had known about ayahuasca, and then it was... I mean, I don't really even remember the sequence or how exactly it happened, but it just started coming to me. I don't even remember exactly, but maybe the word would somehow come, or I want to say I would read it somewhere, but at that time there was no literature on it either. So I don't think I was really reading anything, but somehow that idea, that concept was coming to me. And then I remember I was actually doing a yoga training and it was just so strong and it was coming to me subconsciously. It was coming to me in my conscious, just this idea of working with this plant. And wow. I didn't even think I knew what the plant was at the time, but then I started researching and I'm like, oh, this is ayahuasca and this is where it comes from and this is what it's used for. And just the more I would find out, the more I was like, this is it. Mm. This is what I need to do. And I was still resisting it. And then, you know, I would go online and try and find out some information.
Oh,
scary. There wasn't a lot. And eventually I was going to go to Peru and work with this this curandero, and I think I was all signed up, and then at the last minute somehow it didn't happen. But I had also found out about this place, the Temple of the Way of Light, and they were all full. But I think I just kept emailing them, and I was like, hey, look, I need to come. And they're like, okay, well, you're on the waiting list. If anything happens, we'll let you know. And then I think maybe a month or so before, a spot opened and I signed up, and I read the preparation material, and I did everything to the T.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I was always impressed with your discipline also, and how you carried yourself at the temple, and I could feel, I don't know where that's coming from, but I could feel like you have a very disciplined approach to how you're coming to that and how you're coming to plant medicine, which is very appreciated. What do you attribute that to?
I've had a lot of people read my zodiac and family constellation and astrology. Most of that stuff I don't really follow, although I am very fascinated by astrology. Not so much maybe in the way that it's used by a lot of people, but one of the things that really fascinates me and really brought me to this work was my fascination with ancient culture, whether that was Vedic culture or Taoist culture, and this deep sense that there. I think many of us, we very much tend to look at time in a linear way. We look at technology in a linear way. And something I found very fascinating, that all of these ancient cultures were pointing towards this cyclical nature of time and the cyclical nature of advancement. And something about that, I was hesitant because I was also, my cosmovision was very different than that. And yet something about it really drew me into it. And the more I went into it, reading about all of these ancient cultures, I could see that they were all pointing towards something. And for me, it seemed very obvious. And it was strange hearing these different takes on it that really seemed to separate these paths and people fighting with each other. And for me, the essence of them all seemed very similar. So part of my own journey was that fascination with ancient cultures. And a lot of my fascination, I think, was also learning that a lot of these things took discipline. And, you know, so again, from an astrological point of view or family constellation, that may just be my nature. I don't know. And I'm sure a lot of that is true. I think, you know, also part is life circumstances. I grew up in a very loving family, but also when I was younger, we didn't have a lot of money. My parents worked very hard. So I think I also saw like that there, it to progress in life takes a certain discipline, that it takes work, it takes commitment. I think I very much learned that from Boy Scouts, that things don't come for free. Like if you want this merit badge, you have to work for it, and you have to work harder than the next guy. And that, like, things don't come for free in a way. And I think sometimes we look at that as like a Western mentality, but it's really not. It's a very primordial mentality. I know an Arawako guy, which is another Colombian group, and if you ask him really what's the root of any problem, he says falta pagamento, like you haven't made a payment. And I think it's very much going to that idea that like nothing is free. There's a reciprocity for everything. There's an action and reaction. And if we don't do, not only in our actions, but our words and our thoughts, you know, that's karma also. We reap the fruits of what we sow. So I think, you know, maybe there wasn't even a real intellectual understanding of that, but I could sense that. I could experience that. I was really into sports as a kid. I think that was also probably just part of my constellation, who I was. You know, some people say, well, because I'm an Aries, I have a lot of fire in me. And again, maybe that's true, I don't know. But I do feel I need to exert that energy. And if I don't, I don't feel well. I feel like there's something caged inside. So sports was really good for me, and learning to hone that energy. And sports definitely taught me discipline, because again, it's a competitive aspect, and if you don't compete well, you're going to lose. And I also really saw there was no magic to this process. Yeah. It was hard work. It was effort. Yeah. It was, how early do I get up? How many hours do I practice? You know, where is my mind at? So I think all of those things were very valuable. And also martial arts. Martial arts was huge. People who've listened to other interviews that I do, they're probably sick of me talking about it.
Well, but it came up in the last one.
I've learned as much from jiu-jitsu as I have from plant medicine. And I find it very powerful because it's very real. It's a martial art that's very, very real. Every day when you compete, you feel what it's like to have a man on top of you, trying to choke you, trying to break your limbs, using his force. You realize very quickly that size matters, strength matters, that there are realities in nature that you can't avoid. And the only way to avoid is to be better than someone, to practice more, to be more disciplined, to learn technique. You know, here in Peru, maybe I'm a big guy, but in the Western world, I'm not. I'm probably an average size man. So if I'm fighting a bigger guy, all things being equal, he's going to win. Like, that's a reality of the world. And the only way to compensate that is to be faster than him, to be better than him, to be more skilled, to practice more, to lift more weights, whatever that is. But I think it's something that and interestingly, I mentioned, I just interviewed this guy, Alonso Del Rio, today, and something he says is very relevant, and it's something that I see a lot in, and again, this is just my point of view, I could be completely wrong, but I see a lot in this spiritual work. You know, he was using this analogy of like the seven chakras. Yeah. And that a lot of the work was transmuting that through vibration, through transmutation, through this base of red into this higher frequency of orange, into a higher frequency of yellow, and then eventually moving to the heart, which is green. But it's very fascinating because he's also not saying, well, and then from there you're going to the next chakra and the next one, which is what most people view, and that they view that the goal is to go here, to this level. And these plants can very much take us there. But something that I've really seen is I think a lot of people can get lost in those layers. And there's this esoteric principle of as above, so below. As below, so above. And I think it's a really beautiful analogy that those two realms have to come together, and they meet in the heart. And that's the archetypal image of Christ, of Jesus, the heart that's on fire, that's pure love that's emanating from that. It's not coming from his seventh chakra or you know, from the third eye. It's coming from his heart. So I think some of these things like discipline are actually super important, because even in this world of plant medicine, of shamanism, people talk about these things like black magic or brujeria, which, you know, all of those things are very valid and they're very real. But like any reality, they're real through the cosmovision that we see the world through. And so they can mean very different things to different people. But one of the faults, I think, that can lead to a lot of those things is not being disciplined. And I've seen that in my own path. You know, I've seen where I've made mistakes and where I haven't been in integrity. And it's a very, I think, as one begins to work with plants or really any path, it doesn't have to be plants, it could be anything. But when we find ourselves out of integrity, out of that discipline, there's a very profound sense of how that not only affects me, but then affects everyone that I come into contact with. And that's a reality. And so having that discipline is very difficult.
Yeah.
In this work, for example, like we were talking earlier about this idea of the dieta, it's a huge sacrifice, going into isolation for weeks, maybe months, eating very little food, nothing sweet, not having sex, not drinking alcohol, not reading books, literally almost doing nothing, just being with yourself. And that takes a tremendous amount of discipline. But it's also seen that that's where the real rewards come from. And so that's I know that's kind of a long answer, but I think probably to some degree it's inherent to who I am, but it's also something that I've seen is really important. Yeah. And like everything, like life requires a balance. If
I was going
to
bring that up,
we have to be disciplined. And we have to also realize that sometimes, like anything, if taken to an extreme, it can also become unhealthy. Yeah. Much like that example of the dieta. The dieta, it's a specific time in someone's life. Life isn't meant to be lived in a dieta. It's also meant to be enjoyed. I think that's also another common fallacy that some people have. The best maestros I know, you know, they also know how to have fun. They're laughing most of the day. They're enjoying themselves. And when they go into dieta, it's something very serious. Like they are disciplined in that way. So I hope that answered it.
that did more. And you also answered the follow-up questions I was going to have, which is, you know, where do you draw the line of too much discipline? And you know, like this is what you just answered. I always appreciated the discipline. And I think it actually lended itself very well to the Temple of the Way of Light, their preparation document. That the share that I read before that was actually one of the most thorough ones that I've been through to prepare. I don't know if it was available already when you went back in 2012. Did you go in 2012? Was that the or 2000?
I went in 2012. Yeah, 2012. There was a document. It certainly improved over time, but even then it was quite good. I mean, certainly the work has improved. It's a evolving organism like everything. But even at that time, there was a lot of emphasis on how to prepare, and I found that super useful. There's a reality to that, and that's something I very much learned through my own process, and also through working with many people. Again, that idea of like falta pagamento, like we get out of these things what we put into them, and that's something that's very important to realize, and something I think sometimes we don't want to hear. You know, sometimes I'd use the analogy of jiu-jitsu. It's just because two people start in the same day doesn't mean they're going to end up in the same point. Yeah. Not at all. You go to any jiu-jitsu class or anything, and a piano class, anything. The path is full of all sorts of obstacles, of things that need to be overcome. The path itself, our internal path, there's so many variables. But certainly that preparation work is huge, and it pays off.
So that first ceremony you had in 2012, how much of all your past experiences with yoga, with martial arts, with plant medicine came into play when you faced the medicine, when you faced Grandmother Ayahuasca? Was that a revelation at that point? Did everything come together, or was that a very different experience that had nothing to do with all that? I'm curious how that came to help.
Yeah. Just to preface, I mean, I always say this if I ever speak about my own experience, everyone's experience is different.
I remember
that. So
it's
super important to never compare our experiences, because I think that's this idea also where we talk about plant intelligence, which if people are familiar with this work, it's something that gets spoken of a lot. And I think to a lot of people, that's very much outside their cosmovision. But it's not really a foreign concept. The intelligence that created this universe, I think anyone can see that and be like, yes, there is something very intelligent. However you want to look at that, one source, many sources, but there's an intelligence at work that we have a very small comprehension of. And And so when we're working with plants, it's very personal. And that intelligence, again, however we want to look at it, whether it's outside of ourselves, inside of ourselves, it works very uniquely with us, unimaginably perfect for us. Yep. And sometimes that's also very hard to accept, because sometimes that's also probably what we talked about, this idea of intention versus expectation. Often we want something, we think we know how it should be. And I think one of the beautiful, intelligent ways that these plants work is that they almost have to work in a way that we don't expect, because it has to bypass the mind that thinks it knows, that tries to reduce. If everything could be answered by the mind, we wouldn't need plants and we'd be happy. We'd be at peace. And yet, how many people are truly happy? How many people are truly at peace? Very few, very few. If anyone is really honest with themselves, and that's not to say we're all depressed or, you know, not at all. Everyone experiences moments of joy and happiness, but there's also a deep longing in a lot of people. And so we can't separate, like I was saying, we can't separate who we are. So to answer your question, everything that was part of my life was part of those ceremonies. Yeah. It was working with my essence, with who I was. And at that point, what I was really looking for was to touch the unknown, to experience something that I had a deep sense that was there, but that through whatever practices I was doing, I couldn't touch. Whether it was because the practice wasn't allowing me or it was me myself that was in the way. But I sensed there was something awesome out there. And I mean that in the true sense of the word, like full of awe. And very much that's what ayahuasca gave me. It gave me a tremendous amount. And I certainly had fear going in. I had a sense that specifically this plant could take me to places that I may not be ready for. And I wouldn't say ayahuasca was gentle. It literally blew my mind off, but it also did it in a way that allowed me to really take in something that was awe-inspiring and it just really opened me up and shifted my consciousness. It shifted my cosmovision. It allowed me to see something that I knew existed, but that I had never experienced before. And sometimes specifically ayahuasca it's often, there's often this kind of like feminine symbology ascribed to it, this snake or this kind of like this dance, this ethereal kind of quality. Sometimes they describe her as jealous or, you know, being able to really go inside you. And I think in that way, and you know, this could just be me making it up, but I think in that way too, it kind of drew me in.
Yeah.
Through that experience. Probably if my first experience was something harrowing, I wouldn't have come back. I wouldn't have kept on this journey. So somehow in a way it gave me a taste of something and then allowed me to come back to it.
Mm. That's beautiful. And you took me to some flashbacks of the discussions we had when you were facilitating the ceremonies in Peru at the Temple of the Way of Light, and you know, reminding me that, like, even though we talk about experiences on this show, they're all very personal. Even the preparation for the experiences is very personal, and the integration is very personal, and it's all based on our context and our previous experiences, and it's a challenge because people are interested to know what happens, and you can't put it into words, and you have to preface all that. And but then if you don't share any of it, then they become afraid of it. They're like, well, what are they doing out there? It's weird. So, you know, it's like finding the balance to, you know, provide some insights on how I think from my experience of how people can move forward and not be afraid of the unknown. I think it's I think you did a great job there, walking that line of, you know, sharing some of your insights. But, you know, like, people need to understand, like, you're not going to get that. Like, you're going to get a completely different experience that is yours. It's your own experience. And it's what the medicine, you know, you get out what you put in. Like, everything you touched on, I'm like, oh, this just takes me right back to that introduction session we had with you, which was, again, like, it was great, one of the best ones. And I really appreciated that. Now, like, you've probably conducted countless ceremonies, or not conducted, but facilitated countless ayahuasca ceremonies since then. Like, watching people go through those ceremonies, what are some of the big insights you've gained from that on kind of humanity and the world and us as people on you've shared some of them, but I'm curious if you have a few of them that really stand out that you haven't shared yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I think really what I've seen and gained is the ability to see that all of these esoteric teachings, these ancient cultures that had tremendous insight into the human condition, that they were all real and that they were all pointing towards something universal. And as you were saying, the medicine does work in a very personal way. And from the outside looking in, it can seem like it's working in these chaotic ways and that nothing is related and symbolic and nothing is concrete. But the more I've worked, you know, I can never say I understand how the medicine is working, but I see commonalities, I see archetypes, I see patterns. And part of that is through my own process, and a huge part has been through working with so many people. I mean, it's really been a gift, and just seeing time and time again how these patterns play out. And that's why I was saying it. I mean, even if you take, for example, like a Buddhist point of view, that there is suffering inherent in nature, it's the Christian archetypal point of view that we all started in grace, we all started in Eden, and through duality, through this tree of good and evil, the knowledge of good and evil, interestingly, we were tempted by the snake, by actually the symbol of wisdom and medicine, we fell from grace. And that's where also I think a lot of these religions, so much has been lost, because there's a real power in symbology and tradition and gnosis, experiencing something. And when we don't experience that, like anything in life, we can get lost in the world of form, in the world of ideas, of beliefs. And I think one of the things that a lot of these traditions are pointing towards is this idea that we create our own suffering. And suffering comes from the mind. It comes from this attachment to these ideas of, I am this, I am that. And most of us, we're constantly in this state of all of these thoughts arising, and we believe that they're all real. And we live our lives in this cloud, in this fog. And I do it. There's many times where, you know, especially being busy, I'm like, well, I have to do this and I have to do that. And then there's this and this. And then all of a sudden, it's like I step back and I'm like, I've been living in an illusion that the past minutes or hours, I'm not really present. I'm not really smelling what's around me. I'm not really feeling what's around me. And all of a sudden, there's a peace, and there's no problems anymore, and nothing has changed. All of the things that need to be done are still there. They haven't gone away, and yet they've lost that heaviness because they're not there in that moment. But where did they go? They were just there a minute ago, So where did they go? And through this process, and I think these plants like ayahuasca are extremely powerful about that, with this, is they take us into that. They take us into our nature. They take us into those thoughts, into those belief systems, into those cosmovisions, sometimes in a gentle way, sometimes in a very harsh way, in a way that it's very difficult to escape. There's nowhere to run. And we're forced to be in that. And interestingly, a lot of these traditions, like especially in the Amazon, but you see this in shamanic traditions all over the world, they would say that this reality is secondary. And that's very counterintuitive to a more Western approach, yeah, where we say, well, this reality is primary and anything else is secondary. My dream is secondary. My emotions are secondary. My thoughts are secondary. In this shamanic point of view, the dream is primary. And from the dream, the world is manifested. From the singularity arises the duality, arises the light and dark, the good and bad. So the world that we're living in this duality, is actually secondary. There's something primary to that. And that primariness is who we are. But we just get lost in all of the infinite cycles of, in a Buddhist point of view, of birth and death. I am this, I am that, I have to do this. Every time we think about that, we're reborn into this world. And so these plants take us on this fascinating journey into often all of the things that are holding us back. Our fears, our doubts, where we're lacking, where we've made mistakes, where we haven't been in integrity. Sometimes some of the local people here will use that word like sin. In Spanish, it's pecado. And they'll say, we have to atone for our sins. And a lot of people take that from this kind of religious point of view, like, well, that seems crazy.
Yeah.
But again, I think there's a much deeper truth to that, that we have to come to terms with where we've been out of balance. I mean, even that word sin, it comes from this idea of to miss the mark, to not be in center, to not be aligned to truth, to reality, to God. And this work of plants begins to take us into that. And it can be a very difficult process.
Yeah.
And again, that's why so many different things can come up. People can have very different experiences. It's also where people are ready to go. Because sometimes people come and they say something like, I want enlightenment. Maybe, but there's a very high likelihood that we're not ready for that. Because to do that means to come face to face with the entire reality of creation, all of our past, all of our present, all of the future possibilities, to really stand in the face of awe and be able to take all of that in is a tremendous responsibility. And so often these plants are helping us to prepare, you know, one layer at a time. We often use this analogy of an onion, peeling these things off. Often first, like that layer, or that analogy that Alonzo was using of these base layers, the red, the orange. You know, first we have to get rid of that heavy stuff. If we were in a very abusive relationship, or if we have these very negative thought patterns of I'm not enough, I'm not good enough, we have to really go into those. If we have a lot of anger towards people, we have to go into that. If we have resentment towards our father or our mother or our spouse, we have to go into that. And that's where often this analogy of a mirror comes in. And what I'm going to say may trigger some people, but part of that mirror is looking and seeing that all of the things that we judge people for, we also have inside of ourselves.
Yeah.
And until we can resolve that in ourselves, it has no choice but to be manifested in others. As we begin to change ourselves, there's a very beautiful saying, I think it's attributed to Lao Tzu, is that, you know, we have to be the change that we want to see. And we have this tendency of humans is we find fault in everything, everyone, but it's very difficult to see it in ourselves. And yet those same thought patterns are there running, but they're often subconscious. And so to really become aware of that, to see where also I've done those things, to see in others where they've done wrong, where I've done wrong. And that's where also a lot of these traditions, I think, are pointing to this commonality of this oneness, that I am you. In the world of manifestation, we're not. We're separate. We have to be separate. That's the only way we can interact with someone, that we can experience something, is there has to be something outside of ourselves. But in that way of doing that work, we're constantly forced to come back inside. And that's the archetypal hero's journey. And it's very difficult. You know, few people really want to go into that. It's much easier. And I fall into these patterns. It's like, I don't want to go into something, so I'm going to have some chocolate ice cream, or I'm going to watch something on Netflix because I don't want to deal with something.
Yeah.
That's kind of that path of the warrior, is to be ready to go into those things. And these plants give us an amazing opportunity to do that. It's this ancient technology, and it's often called a science by people who work with these. And that may sound very strange, like, how is this a science? But it's very much a science of the human being. What does it mean to be a human being? What does it mean to walk this earth? What does it mean to be alive? What does it mean to feel? What does it mean to have fear? What does it mean to love? And to fully go into those things. And I think at the root, you know, you asked what is something I found. And since the beginning, for me, what I really see at the root of all of our suffering is fear.
Yeah.
And it's fear of the unknown. It's fear of losing control. It's fear of death. It's fear of life, life itself, and all that that has to offer.
Yeah.
And to overcome that fear, it's the greatest challenge any of us will ever face. And from that, all of these, what we may call negative emotions or patterns arise, the anger, the frustration, the lust, the jealousy, the envy. If you look at it from a Christian point of view, you know, the seven deadly sins, those all come from that primordial split. And to truly be able to wash away all of those layers it's a tremendous feat. It's a tremendous feat to say, I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not this. Who am I at my essence? But the more we go into that, I think the more we're able to see that universally. There's a beautiful quote by a samurai, Musashi, and he says, when you understand the way in one thing, you understand it broadly. And I think it's very similar for us as human beings. As we begin to more deeply understand ourselves, we begin to see that in all things. That's also that analogy of as above, so below. And so that's the path. That's what these medicines are doing. And for some people, it can be a spontaneous thing, although that's quite rare. For the vast majority of people, it's a process. It's a science. It's an art. And it's coming and working with these things. And always, it's helping us to evolve. It's helping us to become more whole. That's what healing means. That's what integration means. Integrity. It means to be whole. And I think these plants are trying to bring us back to wholeness. You know, a small caveat with that is I think it is vital that people work in a set and setting that's conducive to that. Because these plants are extremely powerful, powerful beyond our wildest imagination, if we're willing to go to those places. So to be in a space that's well held, where there's a scientist, a doctor who knows how to take care of ourselves, maybe in a very surgical way, taking things out, putting things in, moving energies, and also just in a very human way, like really looking at us, sitting next to us and telling us from, not from a place of mind, but from a place of heart, it's going to be okay. And that simple act of humanness can be everything to someone.
Mm. Yeah. I can relate to so much. Thank you. It's funny because I use some of those terms you use now, and I don't know where they came from. I don't know if they came from you, and I picked them up from the temple. And it's beautiful. The onion. I mean, first you have to realize there's an onion there. Because, you know, a lot of people, they'll be like, I have no trauma, I'm good. And I'm just going to go do this for spiritual growth. And I'm like, just like you were saying, I'm like, okay, we'll see. We'll see. Do your preparation and go through that. And then the medicine will give you what you need. And you'll see the onion. This is really important. Everything you shared, and I don't really have anything to add, except, you know, from my own experience, I've lived a lot of that. I've experienced it. I've seen it. I attest to that. It's kind of funny the experience at the Temple of the Way of Light continued to happen even behind. Like, that's the other thing, is there's an obsession a lot of time with the ceremony itself and the substance. Especially with the substance, and people forget that the substance is one element to the entire experience, for lack of another word, but experience to me doesn't do it justice. But it's just one small element, as you were saying, the doctor, the healer, the facilitators, the location, the preparation, what happens before, afterward. Like, your intent. Oh, God, I remember at the temple, there was a copy of the Bhagavad Gita, a little book, a little copy on the shelf. And I would read that before the ceremonies. And one day I read the passage about intent without expectations. And I worked on that through the ceremony. And it was really interesting because I actually ended up in a loop as a result. But, you know, there's the intent without expectation is huge. And a lot of people don't even understand the difference between the two, and there's a little bit of education there, of example of intent with an open heart, knowing that you're not here to necessarily receive this, but you're opening your heart with that intention. And so, yeah, I mean, I really appreciate all the wisdom you've shared here. And I'm also getting a notification from my browser that you're running out of storage space. So I'm hoping the recording is still going through. Crossing my fingers that the powers that be help us there. Now,
I can free up some storage in my end. Once we end it.
Yeah,
maybe it's my end too, I'm not sure.
We'll see. It's kind of interesting. I hear hints of that on other podcasts as well, where people are very thankful for their guest patients, so it's not only us. So, you know, I'm going to bring this back. We've touched, it's not really bringing it back to leadership, because a lot of what you talked about actually impacts leadership and impacts how people lead their lives in general. But if you were kind of looking at the world today and the leaders around the world today, especially, you know, there's a lot of things happening now. We're recording this, you know, during the Ukraine invasion by Russia. The world is somehow trying to come together. And, you know, I like to ask guests is like, what do you think is the one thing like leaders need the most today, like in the world, to kind of create that better future?
I think it's not just leaders. I mean, leaders are human beings and they're a reflection of all of us. And one of the, for me, one of the truths that plant medicine points to is this idea that, kind of as I was saying earlier, that we tend to judge others for things that we also do. And so as long as we're doing that, we can't expect a leader to do otherwise. The difference is leaders, often they have a much greater impact. You know, without getting too political, but it's an example I often use is Donald Trump. I mean, I can't tell you how many people in this kind of quote unquote spiritual community would say things like, I hate Donald Trump because he hates people. I want to kill Donald Trump because he's a mean person. So because someone does something, we feel justified in doing the same thing. And as long as we do that, then of course that thing perpetuates itself. Why? Because we perpetuate it. Yeah. So again, it's this idea that we want the world to somehow be sane or good, and yet we don't want to do the work ourselves. And so we expect other people to change the world. And again, I think that's one of the things that these plants are pointing towards, is that it's up to us to change the world. It's not up to anyone else. And part of that is because it's so much easier to say, well, it's this person's fault, or this person needs to do that, or this government needs to do that, or scientists need to do that. Yeah. But what am I doing? And sometimes we think, well, you know, I'm insignificant. I'm one person. What difference does that make? It makes all the difference in the world, because society, humanity is made up of individuals, of humans. It's made up of you. It's made up of me. And the impact that all of us have is actually tremendous. Every look that we give someone, every smile that we give someone, every touch that we give someone, every word that we say has a resonance that's profound. And if I had to say one word, the first word that came to mind when you asked that question was principle. What do leaders need? They need principle. And that's something that I see is very much lacking. I think some of that comes from a lack of discipline. I think some of that comes from a disconnect to the natural world, to seeing the cycles of nature, to seeing the laws of nature. I think it's something where, for many different reasons, we're resistant to admit that there are realities in this world, much like the Arawaku guy was saying, like nothing comes for free. Everything has a cost. And if we don't acknowledge that, we're going to find ourselves out of balance. If we're not willing to make those payments, and he's not talking about cash payments, he's talking about our thoughts, our actions, our beliefs, our words, all of those things have a resonance. And that's where I think principle is so important. You know, for example, as you alluded to, there's a war going on right now. And I find it fascinating the reasons that people will justify that. Well, this person did that, or this country did this 20 years ago. Therefore, who are we to say that we can't have war? Well, we can say you can't have war if we believe in the principle that aggressing on someone, killing someone without justification is principle, on principle, it's wrong. Mm-hmm. In Shipibo, there's a beautiful word, and it means good, and the word is hakun. So often it's translated as good, but from my understanding, on a deeper level, it means truth. That which is true is good, and on a deeper level, it means that which is life giving. So that which is life-giving, that which is supporting life, that which is flowing with life is truth. It's good. It has a life-giving energy. That which is hakun me, which is not good, is that which is not true. And it's that which is going against the life-giving nature of the universe. That's a principle. That's a principle that's actually built into a language, which is incredibly powerful to think about. I think, again, for many reasons, we've gotten away from principle, and it's very easy, and that's where fear comes from. If for me, it was very apparent kind of in the last thing we were dealing with, which was COVID. What is principle? What do we believe in? And it was very fascinating for me seeing people who said prior to COVID they had certain principles. And yet when this thing happened, all of those principles went out the window, or they were doing the exact opposite of what they said. Do I love someone? If the answer is yes, then my action has to come from a place of love. Do I believe in segregation? Do I believe in demeaning someone? Do I believe in freedom of choice? Do I believe in bodily autonomy? It's much easier to have a principle when we agree with the thing that's happening. It's much more difficult to have a principle when we don't, but that's when the principle becomes so vital, because it's so easy to get lost in all of the winds and the tsunamis and the forces and the fear that can come up. And that's where it goes back for me to fear. Fear is this tremendously powerful force.
It's a tool that people are using right now to divide us and to weaponize some narratives. And it's, you have to see through that. And
And that's where principle is so important, because if this is, if I find this to be true, if I find this to be supporting of life, life-giving, now I have a rudder in the storm that no matter how much the storm batters me, batters the boat, if I hold true to that principle, the rudder will get me through. Yeah. It's very easy once those storms coming to say, well, in this case, the principle doesn't hold, or I don't really believe it, or there's an exception here. That's when war starts. Yeah. And I don't mean just on a literal level. That's where the internal war starts. Oh. And we all have that war going on within us. So of course we're going to have war going on without. Yeah. Again, that's that esoteric principle, as above, so below. Yeah. So I guess to answer that question, for me, that principle is extremely important. And to really find, for all of us, to find principles that we hold to be true. And then those have to be tested. And if something shakes that, then that principle isn't true. But when we find something and there's a deep sense, you know, that idea of gnosis in our own culture, there was two words for knowledge. One was a knowledge in the way that most of us use that term, knowledge. Like, well, I read this in a book, therefore I know it. Or one of my favorite things of facilitating is maybe we'll say something to someone and they're like, oh, yeah, well, I know that. And it's like, well, you know it. But do you know it? Are you living it? Is that who you are? And if the answer is no, then we don't know it. It's a knowledge that's coming from the mind. It's not a gnosis. Yeah. It's not something that's coming from the heart. And when something is coming from the heart, that space of the heart, there's a truth there. It's life-giving. And that principle, we should cherish that like a gem, like God gave this to us. You know, maybe if you come from a yogic philosophy and your guru gives you this amulet, you cherish that, you know, because that's imbued with the essence, with the spirit of that person. That's why people wear a cross, because even when they're in a difficult time, they can look at that cross and they're imbued with truth. They're imbued with this idea that there's goodness in the world, that there was a savior, that there was someone who died for my sins. And that's a tremendously powerful thing. And so I think for all of us to really find that for ourselves, and I think that's one of the beautiful things that these plants, hopefully, if we really go into this work with a genuine desire, these plants can begin to open us to that idea of principle, to that idea of truth. And that's where also you mentioned this idea of integration comes in, because life will test us, as we're seeing in the world right now. Life will test us. Yes. It seems like it's, you know, in an exacerbated level right now. But again, it's just a manifestation of where we're at.
Yeah.
None of these things are out of balance with what's going inside of all of us. They're simply a manifestation. So if the world seems crazy, it's because we are crazy. And it's not a judgment, or it's a simple viewing of reality. And so that's for us to be able to overcome. And again, as long as we're pointing the finger or wanting someone else to come along and save us, we're going to struggle.
Yeah.
We're going to struggle.
Yeah. You just reminded me of a movie I watched on Monday. Maybe you've seen it. The Wisdom of Trauma by Dr. Gabor Mate. I don't know if
I haven't seen it. I'm familiar with Gabor Mate's work, but I haven't seen that.
I watched it. I watched it twice, once by myself and once with my wife. And one of the things it talked about was, how we work with the homeless people. And one of the things it said, it's like, don't judge. What they want is to connect with others at a human level. And that's really what's the most important for them is they don't want to be ignored. They don't want to be judged. They want to connect with people at a human level. And there was a lot more to the movie than that. But like, to me, that really resonated because I just realized how much judging I do, even as a father. I will judge my kid for spending his entire day on his phone and staying in his room, for example. And it's hard not to do that when you grow up in a very different way, going outside, maybe being a Boy Scout. And then I realized after watching the movie, I was like, I need to stop that. I need to stop that judging because what he wants is connect at a human level. He doesn't want to be judged. And even you can't do both. That's the other thing is like you can on one hand judge him and then try to connect on the human level at the same time. And sometimes you mix those two together and it's like you really have to be surrendering that judgment, surrender and surrender to that humanity. And sometimes it's scary. That's the other thing that I've seen through medicine is the vastness of our humanity is scary and wonderful. It scares a lot of people. And the nothingness of that canvas scares people so much that they want to fill that nothingness with anything. And they'll jump from one thing to another, to another, to another. And it's hard sometimes. Like even for me, like last Tuesday, I tried to do nothing for a day and having nothing to show for it, knowing when I went inside of it, I would have nothing at the end of it. Not spending time with my kids, not spending time with my wife, just nothing. And it was hard. And but it was a great exercise to look inside, look at and understand the discomfort and understand why am I not comfortable with that? It's a lot of what you're talking about. And I think in our society, we train ourselves to feel that nothing. And sometimes it's trauma from earlier on, like teaching you that being sent to your room is bad, going to a corner is bad, that. And as you go in society, it's like you always, time is money. Like, what do you have to show for your time? And there's a lot of pressure, and that I think that creates unhealthy behavior. But I'm trying to also say that without judging, and it's hard because it's more relating it to my experience. But a lot of what you're saying is like, yeah, there's that judgment and looking within yourself. Like I also what you were saying is like, it's the war within us, like really within each person, amongst us, amongst each person, and amongst the countries and the communities, with the internet, it also created groups that are not necessarily geographically centered, that now it's like a whole other dimension to that type of division, and also communities, which is really interesting anyway. I
So
appreciate it.
what made you leave your job at Microsoft and start this podcast?
It was peeling the onion, if I was going to summarize it. It started about 11 years ago in 2011. I was doing yoga teacher training. I was doing meditation. I had a Kriya yoga class where for 2 hours you've got your eyes closed, the teacher controls your breath work, and at the end you do some humming. And that humming that happened at the end of that class took me out of my body and somewhere else. And I cried and I was like, oh my God, that spiritual stuff is true. I didn't say stuff. I used another word at the time, but I don't want to use that now. And after, it was kind of like a quest to learn, understand, like, what is that world I didn't know about? I mean, I grew up in the war on drugs. I lived in New York for a while. I was taking the train and seeing the posters that showed my brain on the pan and everything. And so very, very similar. And eventually, and I had never done psychedelics until 7 years ago, when I had my first ayahuasca ceremony with Native American people here, while my wife was at the Temple of Light at the same time. And then what happened then, I saw the birth of our daughter. I got a lot of great insights, but I think I was still peeling the onion and peeling it, peeling it, peeling it. It helped me kind of understand some of my relationship dynamics and other things. And you kind of fast forward, and then the next year I went to the temple. That's where I met you. And then I did more work after that, and continued to peel the onion. In fact, it's interesting, right after I went to the temple with you, the next weekend, I went to a peyote ceremony, which I would tell anyone, don't do that. You even told me not to do that. The spiritual wounds are fresh. They've just been salt together. But it was, I looked at people in high regard who I joined in that ceremony, and I really highly respected them, and I had that experience that was also very formative and helped me peel more layer and realize that, it's in those experiences, it's also really important to know yourself inside and to know the signals that come from the outside on how that influences your experience. And I realized actually through the experience that the first half of the ceremony, that peyote ceremony, I was really scared because I was like, oh, I've got all the spiritual wounds that are open up. They're throwing some salt on there. And then halfway through, I realized I was like, no, like, look deeper inside. Look inside. Where are you at? Who are you? And actually, I kind of regained strength and confidence through that, and found myself. So there was, you just reminded me of that, but there are several episodes since then. And eventually I actually went into a deep depression because I felt a calling to the medicine, like a really strong calling. I'd gone back to Peru in the Sacred Valley. That's actually where I met Kunti. I had a really strong ceremony like 4 or 5 years ago. In that ceremony, I was actually guided in that vision. I was actually guided to a Shipibo village, and I met elders, and they were like, you need to help others. You need to be of service, and you need to use your skills to help others. And when I got that, I was like, I'm not going to go all hippie, and I have kids, and I can't do that. What the heck do you want me to do? And so I went back. I went back to work. I went back to corporate America. I tried to write a book about it, and I tried to have everything at the same time and answer the calling. Eventually, I went into a deep depression because, like, things weren't aligned anymore. I realized this, talking about principles. I realized the principles of Microsoft weren't aligned with my principles. And that's when I decided I was done. And I wanted to focus on following that path, and helping share kind of the wisdom of plant medicine, and help destigmatize it, and also help people realize that it's not just for mental health, that like, mental health is one aspect that can help with, but there's other things that we shouldn't judge either, that they can help with, relationships, creativity, and helping you heal others as well. So that's how I ended up there, here with you now, here and now.
Oh, that's great, Sebastian. Yeah. And you have this idea of leadership tied into the podcast?
Yeah, the leadership, that's interesting. I use leadership in the broad sense, really. It's like how each individual manifests their own future and how that goes kind of up to the community, to the family, to the community, and eventually to, you know, people run companies, people run teams, but, you know, countries, whatever. So it's very broad. And I had a coach trying to help me, who worked with plant medicine, to trying to help me leave Microsoft to map that out. And he was like, you need to do a podcast. And I was like, no, not another podcast. And there's so many of them. And eventually it kind of hit me of like, no, I want to talk about people's journeys and the insights we can gain from those journeys that can help others and even help people who will never do plant medicine, even help people Steve Jobs is a good example. I mean, he's done psychedelics, and people who are totally against psychedelics will use iPhones every day. And so I wanted to kind of look for also more leaders like that, that had already impacted the world with some of their learnings, whether it's with, you know, ayahuasca or other plant medicine. And we actually had already benefited from that, because I believe it's hypocritical, but, you know, to say, well, psychedelics are bad, but then I'll use my iPhone and, you know, here's a company maybe who tried to have a more positive impact than others on the world, though it's questionable with their manufacturing and all that. But, you know, I know I've worked in tech, so I know how much they've tried more. And so I wanted to, yeah, that's how I ended up doing the podcast and having guests to share their journey. It's humbling. You know, that you talked about wanting to be enlightened. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I had this thing. It's like the more you learn, the more you realize, the less you know. Another kind of vision I had recently is like, you read all the books in the universe to realize you don't have to read any books to really understand it all. And I think in yoga, they talk a little bit about that. When I was reading Patanjali Yoga like 11 years ago, but there's a concept like that. It's like, you know, like you read it, and then at the end, it's like, well, you don't really need to read it. So, yeah, but it's a great journey, and it's amazing to see once you're free, to see how the universe answers that call. It's really humbling. So, I mean, we reconnected.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Which was completely random. And it's such a pleasure. And I can't wait to, I haven't listened to your podcast yet. And I can't wait to listen to that. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, you can start with the Kunti one. That'll be like 3 days of listening for you.
Well, Kunti and I, we always have, after ceremonies, we'll talk for hours, and she's amazing, and we'll actually play. That was one of the wonderful things in my experience that happened, is when I met Kunti, we were working with Pepe, who was featured in the movie The Last Shaman, and at the end of the ceremony, once he was done with his part, he actually was open to having Kunti sing. And he also invited me to play music. And so I started playing harmonica, flute, drums. And that was like 4 years ago. And that opportunity that he gave me allowed me to just discover the side of myself I had totally forgotten. The creative side and a way to use that to help others. Yeah, that was thanks to her and Pepe that, you know, I was able to expose that creative side, which, you know, was hard to leave after that. So, yeah.
Oh, that's great, Sebastian. It's wonderful to see you. You look great, and it's wonderful to see you doing something like this. And the world needs more of that.
Oh, it's, thank you.
You know, as we were kind of alluding to, it's, sometimes I think it's like, there's two ways of looking at the world, that its nature is good or that its nature is evil. And, if we want to see the world as evil, that's a tough way to live life.
Yes, I agree. Thank you.
And so, you know, to trust in that higher source of goodness and to try and spread that, because as we see, the world really needs that right now in many levels. So, the more people who can start doing that is amazing. So I'm super happy you're doing that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's really that. It's really hard, and it has to be very conscious too. It's very easy to want to get trapped in the latest narrative, even that's trying to pull you. It's trying to pull your fear and everything, and want to jump and say, yeah. And sometimes I'm like, no, like, I'm going to play flute today. I'm going to play flute and I'm going to have a nice positive reflection, and I'm going to post that on LinkedIn, and I'm going to post that on places where I think that needs to be heard. And people might think it's weird because they want to jump on their latest fearful narrative, but I'm not going to do that. And it does, sometimes it requires a lot of thinking, because it's like, that's not the world I want to live in, what they're talking about. Like, I know there's good. I meet the good every day. I see it every day. And there's plenty of focus on the bad. Like, there needs to be a huge balance right now. So I have no problem balancing it out. So thank you. I'm glad you're seeing that. And I think we're almost at time. So was there anything else you wish I'd asked you, or you want to ask, or where people can find you, or anything you want to say to wrap this up?
Just thank you for having me on. It's great to connect. It's always, for me, wonderful seeing people a number of years after, and just to know that they're alive and well and flourishing, and it's a beautiful thing. And I think we're all deeply connected in this way. I think sometimes more than we realize. And I as I said, I started this podcast. If anyone is interested in checking that out, it's called The Universe Within. You can find it. There's a video version, so it's on YouTube, it's on Apple, Spotify, all the podcasts. And if anyone is interested in my work, I have a website. It's called nicotianarustica.org. Nicotiana rustica is the Latin name for the type of tobacco we work with. We're doing some retreats actually around the world. We were predominantly just working in Peru, but kind of because of the pandemic, we're beginning to take it outside the borders here. And so we'll be in a few places this year and in Peru. And I think that's it, man. Just to say thank you for having me on. And it's great to see you. And I hope we get to connect sometime.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I mean, I do plan on visiting and around the area you're at. I missed that. I was there in 2019, just before the pandemic. And we could talk a lot longer about that. So thank you, Jason. I look forward to reconnecting together in person. Thanks for listening to another episode of Leadershipadelics. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed making it. And if you only listen to it, we also have a YouTube channel that allows you to connect more deeply with the guests by seeing some of the visual cues that happen when we talk that don't necessarily come across when you just listen to somebody. And if you like the show and haven't subscribed to it yet, subscribe to it. If you haven't given a review yet, oh, I'll be so humble and grateful if you give a review. It also helps get the word out there and find more listeners and change the world one person at a time. And finally, if you know of any guests that could be a good fit for the show, send them my way and I'll take it from there. On that note, have a great day wherever you are, and I'll see you again next week.
All right, everyone, that's it. I hope you enjoyed that episode. It was really a pleasure and honor for me to be on Sebastian's show. It was, interestingly, number 11 of his show, which is a very special number for me as well. So that's it. I hope you enjoyed that. Check out Sebastian's work. If you enjoyed this interview, consider supporting him, subscribing to his show, checking out his retreat that he'll be running with Kunti. Kunti's an amazing woman. She's one of, I would say, actually the few people in this realm of work who I would really entrust myself with. So I feel they'll be doing great work. As always, if you're able to support this podcast, if you find you're gaining something from it, benefiting from it, that's always a really big help to me. Patreon is a really beautiful option. It's a subscription service. I think very much working on this
kind of Andean cosmovision principle of Aini reciprocity. So if you feel like you're gaining something from this podcast, having the chance to give back, that's really a huge help to me to be able to continue to make these shows. You can sign up for as little as $1 a month. There's a few different tiers you can sign up for. They give you things back like early access to shows, bonus material, Q&As. To all the people who have done that, as always, thank you very much. I always deeply appreciate your support. And if you are able to do that, thank you in advance. If you are not able to do that, as always, just doing some of the little things really helps a lot. So if you're watching this on YouTube, hitting the subscribe button, turning on the notification bell, liking the video, that's a really big help with the algorithms to get the show out to a bigger audience. And then if you're listening to this, whether that's on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, subscribing to the channel, I'm not sure if it's subscribing or following, but one of those two, leaving a starred rating and a short review, that's also a really big help. So I think, as I said in the intro, my next guest will be hopefully my friend Kathy, talking about the work she does with mushrooms, with psilocybin. She's also from Ireland and very much of these traditions of the Celts, the Celtic traditions, the Druidic traditions, the Gaelic traditions. So that should be a really fascinating interview. Linda Christine Adams, who's a mutual friend, who's done a lot of work in this plant medicine world. And then Alejandra Ortiz, who I interviewed in the Sacred Valley of Peru, very much talking about the voice and sound and how that also is related to a lot of this plant medicine work. So those are and should be really fascinating conversations. Again, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Thank you to Sebastian for having me on. Thank you all for the support, and I will see you all on the next episode. Doom.